Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast from KJZZ's The Show. Each Friday, we review the biggest and most important political stories of the week with a panel of experts, which puts those stories into perspective to help us understand why they matter. Here's this week's episode.
Can't imagine the courage it took for them to share their truth, and I'm deeply grateful. And then we also stand with the thousands of people whose voices and advocacy built the farm worker movement. The actions of one individual do not define its success or its power.
Of those 207 that were registered to vote, 60 of them did cast votes. So obviously we're going to be looking at whether they are in fact not citizens of the United States or if they can provide proof of citizenship.
Many folks didn't anticipate being in this situation. And we try to do this in a way that respects their dignity and privacy. It is hard, but I would tell you that these are not unusual circumstances.
Every single time when districts go out to the voters and they try to pass an override, they say smaller class sizes and better teacher pay. And what do teachers get? They get a marginal nugget from the bottom of the totem pole.
Arizona, the number one increase of any state in the nation, up $1.35 at the statewide level from a month ago.
And with me to talk about the future of state budget talks, what's next for the Arizona Independent Party and more, are Marcus Dellartino of First Strategic. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning.
And former State House Minority Leader Reginald Boulding. Reginald, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Marcus, you're interested in that beer story, huh?
Oh, I'm sticking around for this, but I'm just going to shorten it up. Yes, of course beer can save the world.
All right, we've got that taken care of. So, Marcus, what's going on with the state budget? I mean, it's a little early to really have serious negotiations, I think, even in the end of March. But for the governor to say, we're done for now, is this a problem?
No. We always have a blow up. And I think Reggie would probably back me up on that. Yeah. Sometimes they're bigger than not. But I would call this the first blow up, if not the short term blow up. And I will also confess to you that on at least late this week, staff was meeting. And it's more important, frankly, for staff to be meeting than the governor and the speaker and the president. And so I'm hopeful. I say this more than I want to, but I'm hopeful that we will be on a track to get out at a decent time this year.
It seems like it's not just sort of personality conflicts with this sort of kerfuffle. There seem like there's some real policy questions here as well, especially as they relate to Prop 123.
Well, you're right. Definitely Prop 123. But also we've got a tax conformity question.
Yeah, and so we've dealt with that, haven't we?
And so, that's causing some trouble too. So – I think the Republicans' budget starting point is full conformity, which for this year is about $450 million. The governor's proposal is a modified, I would call it, conformity, about 240. And so there is some question in there, because when you take into account HR1, and you remember the federal level, mm-hmm. the big beautiful bill, whatever we're calling it, that has tax implications throughout the country, but specifically here in Arizona with access, with SNAP benefits, yep. with a whole host of things. And so we are not – if you're out there and you think that we have a big, beautiful budget ahead of us with lots of revenue, that is not the case. And I think we're going to be looking at some modified cuts and maybe some fund sweeps.
So given some of the policy debates, I mean, based on your experience at the legislature, Reginald, like is it notable at all that maybe staffs are meeting, but that the principals are saying, on one hand, you haven't shown us a budget, you're wasting time. On the other hand, it's, you're taking your ball and going home and throwing a temper tantrum. Like, does that matter?
Right now what you're seeing is a little bit of posturing. And I think that, the principals, the governor, the speaker, the Senate president, they have to posture right now in order to, one, see – what the political dynamics are going to be with other pieces of legislation that are coming down the pike. Also looking at, what's happening federally, what's the public sentiment, there's the political calculus. So there are a number of different things outside of just the budget and the numbers themselves that are, accelerating or decelerating the process. I do think that, from the governor's standpoint, I think that they're saying, hey, this is about, transparency. I showed you my cards, show me yours. So I think from her, you know, they're trying to use that as a baseline. And I think that there is a calculus that right now that Democrats feel like, you know, they feel like they're winning. And I think the governor is going to try to articulate a message that, you know, I can't get things done at the state legislature with the budget because we have a legislature that's just not willing to work with me. And I think that may be used politically to try to, you know, pick up some seats. We'll see.
Given the fact that Prop 123 expired last year, the legislature and governor have been trying to come up with an agreement for almost 2 years now, and it seems as though they still haven't. Does that give you pause about whether or not they actually can come up with a deal?
This is actually a really, really big deal for long-term funding of education right now. I'm actually really concerned about Prop 123 right now. I think that there was a sweet spot last year to actually get this thing done. But neither side feels like they have to budge. I mean, you know, the best way to get the legislature to actually move is to have a deadline, drop deadline, and that's when folks start to really move. But I do think with Prop 123, when you're looking at these funding proposals, we're getting kind of late almost to the deadline to even do go to the ballot, you know, from like a referendum, you know, a proposition, you know,
yeah.
Ballot initiative, signature collection. So we're getting in red hot territory right now.
Marcus, it seems like there are a few different elements at play here when it comes to Prop 123. You have the fact that 10 years ago, it barely passed with pretty much everybody in the political world on board. So even though the legislature could refer something to the ballot without the governor, it seems like it would be a good idea to have as many of the parties on board and supporting it as possible. You also, to your point about, you know, not a lot of extra revenue, you know, the legislature backfilled the amount, $300-something million last year. It doesn't seem like they're going to be able to do that again.
That's why I would say it's in everybody's best interest to come up with a solution here. And, you know, it's funny. I was down there this week for insiders to know, you know, the transportation agenda came out in the House of Representatives. It's about 3 pages long. Virtually every bill on there had the word appropriation on it for roads and projects throughout the state of Arizona. And within a couple days of the hearing being set, every one of those appropriation bills had been stricken from the agenda. And so that gives you a quick glance into where we are from a fiscal standpoint. So that money, just so listeners understand this, the Prop 123 money is now just being taken out of the general fund and then allocated. What you ultimately at the end of the day want is your general fund to be healthy, big, strong, so you can spend that money on maybe road projects that we just discussed. And so that's why I say it's in everybody's best interest to figure this out. I think I am optimistic, and I don't say that very often, but I will say in this particular circumstance, I think everybody knows it's in their best interest to figure this out.
You think they get it done this year?
I do. I think we are going to have probably one of the biggest fiscal conversations the state has been yearning for. And that's going to be 1, 2, 3. That's going to be conformity. That's going to be the budget. And it all has to happen together.
Interesting. Marcus, let me stay with you. The state Senate this week voted to repeal the Cesar Chavez holidays, and not a paid day off in the state, but you know, very symbolic for a lot of folks. Some really kind of personal debate in the Senate just a day or two ago about, you know, relatives of farm workers or, you know, people who, you know, members who were in the fields themselves as children, arguing to rename it from Cesar Chavez Day to Farm Workers Day or something similar to that to honor the movement and the people who are part of it, as opposed to Cesar Chavez himself with these abuse allegations against him. I'm curious what you make of sort of that debate. And the Republicans basically said, well, we already have Labor Day, so we're good there. Let's just get rid of the holiday.
Yeah, I wasn't I would say I wasn't surprised by it. I think that, you know, from a Republican standpoint, their point was we have plenty of time to have that discussion. We just don't need to make that decision in the next 24 to 48 hours or even at that particular point, probably 12 hours.
The priority is getting Cesar Chavez off the books.
Yeah. And so they acted quickly to make that happen. And, you know, at the end of the day, even though Senator Miranda did not get her amendment, which was to rename it Farm Workers Day, Democrats did join Republicans. I think there was only one no vote at the end of the day on that bill. And so I would say this. I think it's time for everybody to just let's spend a little bit more time on these things before we name days, holidays, buildings, whatever it is. This circumstance is a little bit shocking. I mean, it's what's it, 50, 60 years?
Decades after the fact, yeah.
From the point where it happened. So I'm not too sure we would have figured that out if not for the New York Times. But I think it is a cautionary tale for everybody to spend a little bit more time on these things.
Reginald, do you get the sense that – I mean, this bill seems like it will pass and get to the governor to rename – to take Cesar Chavez's name off the holiday. Do you think there will be space at the legislature to Marcus's point, maybe to have the discussion? Should we rename it Farm Workers Day? Should we do something else with it at some point? Or do you think the holiday goes – Chavez's name goes away, the holiday's gone, that's the end of it?
Well, I do think that the outrage and the pushback and the honoring of the victims is something that absolutely is warranted. You know, you had someone who took advantage of young girls, and that's just something that can't be tolerated. I do know, you know, when you talk about, you know, Cesar Chavez Day and, you know, when it was implemented, it was all about honoring, you know, civil rights and labor organizing and the legacy of those farm workers who really contributed to, you know, Arizona and contributed to this country. And that's important to keep, right? You know, because, you know, Cesar Chavez Day was meant to be about more than just, you know, the man himself. I do think the legislature, Democrats introducing that amendment, I do think that was important because I don't see any time in the foreseeable future that there will be a opportunity to introduce a standalone bill that's going to, you know, honor farm workers here. I mean, there is a significant risk of, you know, removing the legacy of the civil rights movement honoring these labor organizers. So I do think, like, that was important to have that conversation. I think it'll make its way to the governor's desk. I would imagine that the governor would probably sign it. I would imagine that she would probably also discuss the fact that, you know, you need to honor the legacy of farm workers. And it's a tough situation because there are so many people who've given so much.
In a tough situation, a number of Democrats even sort of mentioned that during debate yesterday about, and to Marcus's point, most of the Democrats voted in favor of the bill even without the farm workers because you want to honor the movement, but you also want to respect the victims, which puts I think it puts a lot of people in kind of a difficult spot.
Yeah, I mean, I think the easy fix is what you've seen some of these local, you know, school districts or cities do. They simply replaced the name of the man with the movement and the people to honor the labor organizing. And I think that's something that the legislature could have done. I think that's something that they should do. I just don't see an appetite in the foreseeable future of that bill making its way through the legislature and selling, unless you change the players at the legislature.
Right. All right. We'll have to leave it there. Oh, go ahead, Marcus.
I was just going to say, I think at the end of the day, the governor's play here will be, regardless of what the legislature's decision is, because it's a non-paid holiday, and I'm the governor of the state of Arizona, is I'm renaming it Farm Workers Day. And too much to every Republican chagrin,
like by executive order.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Marcus, I think we found the one thing that Democrats and Republicans in the state can agree on, and it's
beer.
That they – well, maybe beer, but they don't like the name of the Arizona Independent Party. They both agree on that, and this week a judge said, you know what? You're right. It's confusing, and the party, you can't use it.
Right. I mean, this is the battle royale, if you will, the only time Republicans and Democrats will agree on anything. This one's going to be interesting to watch. Probably one of the more interesting things for geeks, for political geeks this news cycle – or sorry, this election cycle. The independent candidate for governor is qualified for the – or got his signatures
in. Yeah, turned his signatures in this week.
And so this has sort of profound effects heading down. And the question is, does it have – does renaming – does having the word independent next to your name on the ballot have a different effect than PND next to your name, party not declared? And ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm not too sure it's going to be a massive difference.
So you don't think it's an issue of voter confusion, that voters see the capital I maybe as opposed to the lowercase I next to somebody's name and say, oh, well, they're an independent candidate, not affiliated with the party, as opposed to a member of the independent party.
Right. I think it may have a couple percentage points difference. As people sort of try and figure out what PND means versus IND.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, at the end of the day, those people are searching for a third candidate, right? And so I think they're going to be somewhat attracted to that. Now, that's all, of course, dependent upon what kind of campaign he puts together.
Yeah.
And it's going to have to be somewhat strong to overcome. But I do think the judge has got – and obviously this is going to be appealed.
Yeah. Paul Johnson, the chair of the party, has already said he has appealed. So we'll see what another judge says. I mean, Reginald Marcus said maybe it's a couple percentage point difference. But, you know, the governor didn't win by that much last time. And if you have a third candidate on the ballot for governor, a few percentage points could make the difference, could it not?
I think this is, in my opinion, the most significant ruling – from an electoral standpoint this year. You know, the term independent in Arizona actually means something, right? It means that it describes a group of voters, not a political party. So, you know, when you say independent, people, they think about, you know, the brand of, you know, I don't support any party. Now, if that term independent is directly tied to a party and a person, I think that totally throws out, you know, what voters were intending. And it has the ability to cause confusion. I think it was, you know, we should have never been in this situation. I don't think we should have ever been in this situation. But I do think that the Secretary of State made the right move when he mentioned that he would not join any type of appeal efforts. Because I do think that when individuals decide that they're going to be independent voters, they're expressly saying they're not supporting any particular party.
Do either of you think, and I'll ask both of you, Reginald, let me start with you. Do you think that assuming that Hugh Lytle, who is the, I guess now the No Labels Party, is what it sort of reverts back to, candidate for governor, do you think that he has a less good chance of drawing votes as a No Labels candidate than he would as an Arizona Independent Party candidate?
Absolutely. I mean, people are going to say No Labels Party and they're going to have no clue what that means, right? I mean, it's going to look similar to Mickey Mouse on a ballot, right? I mean, no one's going to know what that means. Now, had it said independent party or independent, I think that totally changes the game. You know, the number one indicator for voters when they are casting a ballot is party affiliation. So, you know, people are going to automatically assume, you know, that if it's independent, oh, this guy must, you know, he must share similar ideology of me. He's not for any in any party. But that would just be not the case if the ruling had not occurred.
Hmm. Marcus, do you think he gets less votes as a green, as a No Labels candidate?
I think he gets a few less votes. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you got to remember the people that are inclined to vote for an independent candidate are fed up with the Republican Party and they're fed up with the Democratic Party. And so when they look at their ballot, they're already looking for that third candidate. So you are going to definitely lose a few people because it doesn't say IND next to his name.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have to actually spend some money defining what PND is. I would make that part of my campaign. And run on party not declared is independent.
Explaining acronyms must be a fun way to spend a campaign.
Yeah, I mean, it's not your ultimate strategy. But I think, you know, you're going to need those extra votes. And ultimately, at the end of the day, I mean, I don't think he is the next governor of the state of Arizona.
But can his presence influence who is?
Absolutely. There is no doubt about it. And, you know, I'm not going to speak out of school because I've said this about 100 times. But, you know, Governor Hobbs needs independence. That's just a fact of life. And you look at the numbers and the science. And so it affects her more than it does Andy Biggs or David Schweikert or whoever the Republican nominee happens to be. And so it's more critical for them. But ultimately, at the end of the day, they don't look at – and by that I mean Paul Johnson and the independent movement don't look at this as the end-all, be-all, we're going to win this governor's race half as much as they do look at this as the beginning of something.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the beginning of a movement.
Well, and I guess one of the arguments that Paul Johnson and others have made is that it's much more difficult to get on the ballot. You have to collect a lot more signatures to get on the ballot as a party not designated, a small I independent candidate, than you do as a member of the Green Party or the Arizona Independent Party or the No Labels Party. So, Marcus, is that ultimately part of the goal here to have, regardless of what it's called, to have a spot, a landing spot for, you know, independent candidates, non-major party candidates, where you can realistically make the ballot?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think Paul Johnson would say this out loud on your radio show, but let me help him out for a second. The goal's already been achieved in the first court case. This is icing on the cake, is to have a gubernatorial candidate. But the first court case that's already sort of been settled, if you will, is that can the independents bring their threshold down on how to get on a ballot? And the answer is yes. The court's decided. And so I would expect in the future and even, that you will start to see a growing number of independents pop up in state legislative races, in county supervisors races, in almost in every elected office you can see, you're going to see a growing number of independents or PNDs qualify for the ballot.
And I don't think that's an issue, right? I think that, you know, having alternatives is actually a very, very good thing. I think the sticking point is if you call them independent party, right?
So you're all about the name here.
It's all about the name. I mean, when you have voter registration efforts that have taken place for decades, and people who were part of the Republican or Democratic Party, they're leaving those parties, both parties, and they're, you know, identifying as independents themselves. For them, it's really important for them to be able to have some type of ownership and like where they're placed. You know, they don't want to be in a container of of a party system.
It would seem to be challenging, and I'm not a political strategist by any stretch, but Reginald, it would seem to be challenging to have sort of a party for independents, because that's not a monolithic group. I mean, it's people for whom the Democratic Party is not liberal enough. It's for people for whom the Republican Party is not conservative enough, and sort of everybody in between. Like, that's a lot of ideologies.
Yeah, I would argue that's the similar ideology with both the Republican and Democratic Party right now, right?
Fair.
I would imagine, you know, Republicans and Democrats, they're looking within their party and they're saying you're not Republican enough. Or you're not Democratic, you know, you're not progressive enough. So that conversation's happening right now. I do think that ultimately, you know, this is going to ultimately be like who could serve as a potential spoiler for very, very close races here in Arizona. We have 6 to 7 really races that are going to be targeted with regards to legislature. You have the governor's race. It was interesting that no one talked about like an independent candidate for the attorney general's race, which, you know, was divided by a razor thin margin.
Fewer than 300 votes. Yeah.
Yeah. So that really could have made a significant difference. So we'll see.
Marcus, go ahead quickly on that.
I agree. It's, a third party candidate can make a massive difference. I also agree that it is the world's biggest challenge to have to define the independent party, which is you're going to have to do as a candidate. And the only real pathway to do that is to attack the extremes on both sides.
That's it.
But also very hard to do because to your point, and I've said this 100 times, the independent party isn't a monolithic group that just moves. There are people within that group that think the Republican Party's too liberal and the Democratic Party's too conservative, and there's a whole host of voters in the middle.
Yeah, interesting. All right, we'll have to leave it there, guys. Marcus Sellertino, Reginald Boulding, thanks to you both for the conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's all for this week's Friday NewsCap. You can find the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.